ज्ञानतिमिरान्धस्य ज्ञानाञ्जनशलाकय चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः। श्रीचैतन्यमनोभीष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूपकदा मह्यं ददाति स्वपदान्तिकम्। वन्देऽहं श्रीगुरुः श्रीयुतपदकमलं श्रीगुरून् वैष्णवांश्च श्रीरूपं साग्रजातं सहगणरघुनाथान्वितं तं सजीवम् साद्वैतं सावधूतं परिजनसहितं कृष्णचैतन्यदेवं श्रीराधाकृष्णपादां सहगणललिता श्रीविशाखान्वितांश्च वाञ्छाकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपासिन्धुभ्य एव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः। नमो महावदान्याय कृष्णप्रेमप्रदाय ते कृष्णाय कृष्णचैतन्यनाम्ने गौरत्विषे नमः। हे कृष्ण करुणा सिंधु दीनबंधो जगतपते गोपेश गोपिका कांत राधा कांत नमोस्तुते। तप्त कांचन गौरांगी राधे वृंदावनेश्वरी वृषभानुसुते देवी प्रणमामि हरि प्रिये। जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवा साधि गौर भक्त वृंद। हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे। हरे कृष्णा। Yesterday we were reading Srila Prabhupada beginning his description on the spiritual world, on the kingdom of God. And he explained that in the spiritual world there is no need for any artificial illumination because everything is self-luminous. And then he goes on to describe that the Supreme Lord Sri Krishna has a form, and when he descends to this world, he descends in that very form and performs pastimes which are replicas of the pastimes that go on in the spiritual world. In the Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna says, Ajopi san avyayatma bhutanam ishvaropi san prakritim swamadishthaya sambhavam yatma mayaya. He says, Ajah api. Ja means born. Ajah means what? Unborn. So one of the names of Krishna is Aja. So Krishna says, although I am Aja, although I am unborn, api means although, Ajopi san avyayatma, and although I am imperishable, bhutanam ishvaro api san, and although I am the Lord of all living entities, I still descend into the material world periodically. Sambhavami atma mayaya. But when I descend into the material world, I descend out of my spiritual energy, my atma maya. Of course, even the Mahamaya Shakti is Krishna's maya. But by Atma Maya here, Krishna means his internal potency, his spiritual energy, not his material energy. So this verse also defeats the statements of the Mayavadis who say that when Krishna descends, he descends with the material energy. No, he descends. His descent is governed by the internal potency of the Lord, the Antaranga Shakti. Not the Bahiranga Shakti or the Mahamaya Shakti. And therefore, Krishna's appearance here is completely transcendental. It has nothing to do with the birth that ordinary living entities, mortals in this material world, have to undergo. The mortals are forced to take birth according to their karma. But Krishna comes out of his own sweet will. And when he appears, He can do so in any number of forms and in any number of ways and in any place that He so chooses. That is the difference between Krishna and us. We cannot choose where we will be born in the next life. Someone may rather be born in the family of a multimillionaire or a billionaire, but he may not be born like that. Someone may wish to be born very intelligent or very beautiful, may not happen like that. But Krishna, out of his spiritual energy, descends and chooses his parents, chooses his place of descent. Everything is arranged in advance. All his relatives are sent down in advance from the spiritual world to prepare the way for his descent. Even his abode manifests from the spiritual world into the material world. So everything that descends with Krishna is also governed by the Atma Maya, by the internal energy, not by the Mahamaya or the external energy of the Lord. So the Lord's abode, the Lord's associates, the Lord's pastimes, the Lord's forms are all in the realm of the spiritual energy. The activities that go on are all in that realm. So then Srila Prabhupada continues with this theme. The last paragraph now of page 21. In the effulgent rays of the spiritual sky, there are innumerable planets floating. The Brahma Jyoti emanates from the supreme abode, Krishna Loka, and the Anandamaya, Chinmaya planets, which are not material, float in these rays. The Lord says, Natat bhasayate suryo, na shashanko na pavakah yat gatva na nivartante tad dhama paramam mama. One who can approach that spiritual sky is not required to descend again to the material sky. In the material sky, even if we approach the highest planet, Brahmaloka, what to speak of the moon, we will find the same conditions of life, namely birth, death, old age and disease. No planet in the material universe is free from these four principles of material existence. Unquote. So just as in the sun rays, all the planets of this material universe are situated and almost floating. In the same way, in the spiritual world, all the spiritual planets are floating, so to speak, in the Brahma Jyoti. Just as the sunshine is all pervading here in this universe, similarly it is all pervading, the Brahma Jyoti is all pervading in the spiritual creation. This light is conscious. It has a sat feature, as we have seen before. So this consciousness, this light is pervading everything in the spiritual world. So there is no night in the spiritual world. Even if there is night, it's a pastime. Here we are forced to have night because of the way the planets move. But there everything is self-effulgent and everything is conscious. The flowers are conscious, the grass is conscious, the water is conscious, the rocks are conscious, the air is conscious, and everything is also luminous, effulgent. The stones, the sky, the water, everything is effulgent. So in that Brahma Jyoti, all these Vaikuntha planets reside. In the teachings to Sanatan Goswami, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has described the Vaikuntha Loka planets. We will not go into that long description here, but just a brief summary will suffice. Mahaprabhu says that there is no counting the number of Vaikuntha planets that exist in the spiritual world. And some are relatively small Some are 1,000 times bigger, 1,000,000 times bigger, 10,000,000 times bigger. In this way, the Vaikuntha planets are unlimitedly exhibited in the whole spiritual creation. We cannot imagine the length and breadth of all these planets. If the material universe that we live in seems to be very large, then we should know that this one material universe is actually very tiny. Our Brahma has only four heads. And according to the size of Brahma, number of Brahma's heads, the universe is larger. Or rather, depending on the size of the universe, the number of Brahma's heads increases. We see this in the pastime when Brahma came to see Krishna in Dwarka. And then Krishna, in order to demonstrate his super excellence and his opulence, he called for all the Brahmas from all the universes to come. And all the Brahmas came there. Some were 8-headed, some 20-headed, some 100 heads, some 1,000, some 1,000,000, some 10,000,000 heads. Now we cannot, of course, conceive of how 1,000,000 heads can fit on one neck, since we have enough problem managing one head on one neck. We may not be able to understand, but even in the material world these things are possible. And Krishna explained to Brahma that the universe that he was the Brahma of was just one tiny universe. There were other universes that were 1,000,000 times, 10,000,000 times, 100,000,000 times larger than this universe. And the number of universes is very large. When Vasudeva Datta wanted all the living entities in this universe to be delivered, then Mahaprabhu did that. But he said, what is the value? Because this one universe is just like one mustard seed in a sack of seeds. If one seed goes away, what difference does it make? So, even if this one universe with countless millions and millions of living entities disappear, the material creation still remains as awesome. Just to give an idea of the scale of things, let us just imagine how many living entities are there in this Prasadam hall today. Can you give a guess? How many living entities are here in this Prasadam hall? Countless. How is that? The human beings are only about 50 or 60. So where are the others? The bacteria, the germs, the flies, the mosquitoes, the parrots. In every cubic centimeter of air, it is said there are many, many thousands of germs. So can you imagine how many living entities there are in this Prasadam hall? And we are always complaining that this Prasadam hall is too small. So imagine if we had a bigger Prasadam hall. Imagine how many there are in the whole Krishna Balaram Mandir complex. How many in Vrindavan? How many in India? How many on the earth? How many in this one tiny universe? And how many in the unlimited number of material universes, most of which are far, far bigger than this universe? So imagine the number of living entities in this material creation. This material creation is ultimately just one fraction of the spiritual world, of the spiritual sky. So we can imagine how many living entities there must be in the spiritual world, and what the size must be. We cannot even imagine the size of Mahavishnu. Can you imagine that this one Brahmanda, this one universe that we think is so big, is coming from the pore of Mahavishnu's skin? So this whole universe is like, the width of that is like the pore of Mahavishnu's skin, one pore, like the width of his hair, body hair. Can we measure the width of our hair? So imagine Mahavishnu's hair. the width of that, something like our universe. And imagine how big Mahavishnu is, how large he is. And he is just lying in one corner of the spiritual sky in the Karana Sagar, the causal ocean. And the huge, unlimited spiritual world is expanded in the Brahma Jyoti. These planets are unlimited. And on each of these planets, one of the Supreme Lord's expansions presides. Can you name some of these presiding deities on each of the planets? Vasudev, Aniruddha, Sankarshan, Pradyumna, Aniruddha, Janardhan, Vamana, Trivikrama, Urukrama, so many names. If you read the Srimad Bhagavatam and the Chaitanya Charitamrita, you will get so many names of all the 400 forms of Vishnu who preside over each planet, each Vaikuntha planet. So in this way the spiritual world exists. And in each Vaikuntha planet there are unlimited devotees of the Lord who have personal exchanges with the Lord. And life goes on blissfully, eternally in these Vaikuntha Loka planets. All variegatedness exists there. It doesn't exist in the Brahma Jyoti, but on the spiritual planets, everything exists. Variety in its pure form exists there. So this is the spiritual world. Bhagavad Gita gives only a hint. Now the series of verses that has been discussed in the morning Srimad Bhagavatam class is talking about these Vaikuntha planets and what's going on there. So this is a peep. It's like a brochure from the spiritual world coming to give us information of what is happening over there. Some information. Just to motivate us to move to the spiritual world. Prabhupada says here also that this should be our destination, because one who goes to the spiritual world doesn't come back again. However, here in this material sky, even if you take birth in the highest planet, you still have to come back to earth. A Brahma Bhuvana Loka Punah Avartino Arjuna Mam Upeti Tu Kaunteya Punarjanmana Vidyate. Krishna says that from the highest planet in the world down to the lowest, all are places of misery wherein repeated birth and death take place. But one who attains to me never has to take birth in this material world again. So this is the whole new dimension, a whole new world that is existing that our earth planet, the people here have no idea about, which is very sad. So this information must be given to everybody. Every scripture talks about some form of kingdom of God. They call it paradise. The Muslims call it paradise. The Christians call it heaven. But of course, even the Christians are not so clear about what heaven is. Whether they are really talking about the Swargaloka planets or they are talking about the kingdom of God which eternally exists. But we are given clear concepts here. Even the Islamic religion, they are not so clear. I think they call it Jannat, isn't it? Jannat, a paradise. So their conceptions about the spiritual world are not so clear. But we are very fortunate. If you read Brahma Samhita, if you read the descriptions of the Acharyas, everything, the shape of the planets, what's the it's shaped like a lotus flower with petals. The Goloka Vrindavan planet is the chief planet, and that's situated in the middle, like the whorl of a lotus flower. And it has many, many petals, and each petal represents a Vaikuntha planet. And there are unlimited such petals, each representing one Vaikuntha Loka. And thus is this spiritual lotus flower of the spiritual world expanded unlimitedly. It is endowed with inconceivable potency. That same whirl of the lotus flower is condensed within a small portion of the material world and it descends here. And we are sitting in that portion now, in Vrindavan. So this Vrindavan and that Vrindavan is non-different. So the lotus flower is here as well. When Krishna descends and performs, as Srila Prabhupada says, replicas of the pastimes that he performs in the spiritual world, at that time, the lotus flower of Vrindavan cooperates. And we see, for example, that when Krishna would go from Vrindavan to Govardhan and then play in Govardhan and come back, he would do it all in the matter of a short time. Now, if we want to travel from here to Govardhan, how long does it take if you were to walk? Remember that when Krishna went out to graze cows, he would not be going by taxi or bus. He would walk with the cows. And he would reach there in a short time, and he would continue to graze the cows and play. And then by the evening, they would return. All in the matter of a day. How was it possible? Many times from Govardhan he would go to Nandagram, from Nandagram somewhere else and then come back. So how was all this possible? The Acharyas explain that for facilitating Sri Krishna's pastimes, the lotus of Vrindavan expands and contracts. So therefore when Krishna had to move from one place to another, if the distance was too large, the lotus will contract a little bit. So the two places come closer together and Krishna can easily walk across. It takes a short time. And even for the great acharyas like Sanatan Goswami, who would sometimes go to Govardhan and perform parikrama, Krishna also facilitates his devotees' pastimes in this way. So that same spiritual world, the unlimitedly potent and beautiful spiritual world, that same Goloka Vrindavan, which is the crest jewel of all the spiritual planets in the spiritual world, that has manifested here and now. And we are on that whirl of the entire creation, spiritual or material. But it doesn't look like that. It looks like just any other part of the material world. Therefore, Srila Prabhupada says that we should not try to see Vrindavan only by external appearances. Vrindavan is not what it appears to be only. Even though things may appear to be decayed, degenerated, dirty and so on, but it is never to be considered like that. Just as when one enters the Ganges or the Yamuna, one should disregard the materially unhygienic conditions of the water, if that is so. And still one should take bath because the waters are still equally pure, spiritual and potent. In the same way, Vrindavan Dham remains Vrindavan Dham, even though there may appear to be so many things going on here which don't seem to be the right thing to happen in Vrindavan. Nevertheless, Vrindavan is Vrindavan and its potency is not diminished even one bit. Even the dust of Vrindavan remains as powerful. Therefore, even those living entities who perform sinful activities and who have to take birth as animals, they also get delivered by the dust of Vrindavan. Simply by contacting the dust, they are relieved of all their offenses committed previously in human births. And everything here in Vrindavan is personal because that's how it is in the spiritual world. As we said, even the Brahma Jyoti is conscious because it is Sat. So how can it be that the Vaikuntha planets are not conscious? Every grain of dust is a person, is personal. One time one devotee asked Srila Prabhupada, how do we understand that the dust in Vrindavan is personal? And Prabhupada gave a very simple but beautiful answer. Does anyone know what Prabhupada replied to this? If somebody were to ask you the question, we hear everything in Vrindavan is personal and conscious, and we have heard the glories of Raj Raj, the dust of Vrindavan. So how do we understand that the dust of Vrindavan is personal? Any attempts? Anyone? If someone were to ask you, why do you say that the dust of Vrindavan is personal? Dust is dust after all. Prabhupada gave the reply, if you get the dust of any other place and offer prayers to it, it will not fulfill your prayers. It will not fulfill your desires. So, what is the implication? That Vrindavan dust will fulfill all your desires. You can offer prayers to the dust of Vrindavan and will fulfill everything. So therefore we should always remember the glories of the dust of Vrindavan, because this is directly the same dust that is coming from the spiritual world. It's not different dust. Although we use it for constructing buildings and we use it for this and that, we walk and trample over it, but actually it remains that pure spiritual realm. There is, even now, there is no difference between the Vrindavan that was here when Krishna appeared 5,000 years ago and the current Vrindavan. Because Vrindavan always witnesses Krishna's pastimes. Even now, here and now, Krishna's pastimes are going on. But it is called the Aprakat Leela, the unmanifest pastimes. What is the difference between the manifest and the unmanifest pastimes? The Prakat Leela and Aprakat Leela. Would somebody like to explain? What is the difference between Prakat Leela and Aprakat Leela? Manifest pastimes and unmanifest pastimes. Yes. Prakat Leela is pastimes that Krishna performed 5,000 years ago, and it was visible to whom? To everyone. When Krishna's pastimes are manifest and visible to one and all, to ordinary vision, then it is called Prakat Leela. However, when the time comes for Krishna to return to the spiritual world in his manifest form, then he returns, nevertheless his Aprakat Leela goes on. The Leela continues in Vrindavan, but in unmanifest form. In other words, these pastimes are not visible to ordinary vision. It's only those who have the spiritual eyes that can see Vrindavan for what it really is. So everything is here. We only just have to have that consciousness. And we should be very careful, because as the saying goes, familiarity breeds contempt. So if we just cultivate this consciousness that we are here in Sri Vrindavan Dham, it is directly the world of the spiritual world. It is directly Sri Krishna's abode, and he is still performing pastimes here. Then keeping that consciousness in our heart, like a well-kept treasure, we can perform our daily devotional services. So Srila Prabhupada is mentioning here that in the material world, wherever you go, you will have to come back. But in the spiritual world, once you go there, there is no need to return. There is no birth, death, old age, disease in the spiritual world. And then Srila Prabhupada now talks about traveling within this material universe. So let us go to the next paragraph. Page 22. The living entities are traveling from one planet to another. But it is not that we can go to any planet we like, merely by a mechanical arrangement. If we desire to go to other planets, there is a process for going there. If we desire to go to other planets, I beg your pardon, this is also mentioned. Yanti deva vrata devan pitrin yanti pitri vrataha. No mechanical arrangement is necessary if we want interplanetary travel. The Gita instructs, Yanti deva vrata devan. The moon, the sun and higher planets are called Svargaloka. There are three different statuses of planets, higher, middle and lower planetary systems. The earth belongs to the middle planetary system. Bhagavad Gita informs us how to travel to the higher planetary systems, Devaloka, with a very simple formula, Yanti Deva Vrata Devan. One need only worship the particular demigod of that particular planet and in that way go to the moon, the sun or any of the higher planetary systems. Unquote. So this is the formula for interplanetary travel. If anybody is interested, rather than taking the trouble of going by space shuttles and Atlantis and Apollo and Sputnik, this is the authorized way. It's Krishna's path, the prescribed path for residents of the earth, especially human beings, to go to other planets if they wish. The process is not by mechanical arrangement. It is not by ships and rockets, aeroplanes. It is by accumulating pious activities and by worshipping the particular demigod who presides over the planet where we want to go. That is the process. It's such a simple thing. In the Bhagavad Gita elsewhere also Lord Krishna has prapya punya kritam lokan ushitva shashvati samah. He calls these higher planets as punya kritam lokan. They are planets which are meant for those who have performed heaps of pious activities. So no one can go to the higher planets unless they have accumulated a sufficient amount of pious activities. And therefore, if one boards a spacecraft thinking that just on the basis of my technology I will be able to enter the higher planets, it's a mistake. Prabhupada says, for example, that man never went to the moon. If at all they went anywhere, they probably even went to Rahu or some other planet. But they could not have gone to the moon because the moon is a part of Svargaloka, as Prabhupada is mentioning here in this paragraph. And Svargaloka can be attained only by the pious living entities, not by those who violate the four regulative principles and those who don't believe in God. That is not, the moon is not for them. The moon planet is a holy planet of pious people. And there is a beverage called Somaras there. That is not like the ordinary intoxicants of this world, of this earth planet. And these living entities who have accumulated a lot of pious activities can go there and drink that somaras and enjoy life for a long, long time. The presiding deity of the moon planet is Somadev. And like this, every planet has a presiding demigod, who is like the president or the president of that particular planet. All we have to do is to appease him, then we can go there. In the Mahabharata there is a story, Ramayana also in many places, of a great king called Trishanku. This Trishanku wanted to go to the Svargaloka planet and he approached the great sage Vasishtha. Vasishtha outright refused because he did not want to contradict the laws of nature. He understood that the higher planets were meant only for those with sufficient pious activities. And King Trishanku didn't fall in that category as yet. He was not yet qualified to go there. So Vasishtha Muni refused. But King Trishanku did not give up. He approached his sons. The sons became very angry. They said, "You have approached our father. He has refused. Then how is it that you still come to us? When our father has refused, it means that it's not a nice thing to do for you to go there. And in any case, when he has refused, how can you come to us and expect that we will do what our father has refused to do?" So they cursed him. So being very aggrieved, he went this time to Vishwamitra Muni. Vishwamitra Muni fancied himself as some kind of rival of Vasishtha Muni in Brahminical prowess. It was Vishwamitra Muni's great ardent desire that he should match Vasishtha Muni in his spiritual power, Brahma Tej. Vasishtha Muni had previously performed extraordinary feats with his Brahminical prowess. When Vishwamitra Muni had been a king and had tried to take away the Surabhi cow called Nandini, which was in the ashram of Vasishtha Muni, and Vasishtha Muni had refused, then King Vishwamitra had brought his whole army to attack. And simply by a loud sound that he made, uttered, just like that, it's called a hunkar. Just by that he destroyed the entire army of Vishwamitra. And Vishwamitra decided that it was pointless being a Kshatriya. Because a Brahmana could destroy everything just by saying, So he said it's better to be a Brahmana. And he tried and performed penances for a long, long, long time. And ultimately he achieved his goal. But in the process he had many ups and downs. So when Trishanku came to him, Vishwamitra Muni took it up as a challenge because Vasishtha Muni had refused. He said, "Now I will do it." And he began by his mystic yoga power, the power derived from his mystic yoga. He started sending Trishanku up towards the heavenly planets. And Trishanku was rising and rising and rising in his bodily form. Normally, when you have to go to the higher planets, then you have to get an appropriate body. You cannot go in an earthly body there. Of course, there are some rare exceptions, like Arjuna. In the Mahabharata, it is said that he actually went into the Swargaloka by the grace of Krishna. He sat with Indra in Indra's assembly hall. And then he came down after getting a lot of celestial weapons from Indra. So normally it is not possible. One has to get an appropriate body. As Prabhupada describes in different places in his teachings, just as if you want to live in the water, you have to have a different body, a body of a fish which is suited for that kind of atmosphere. If you want to live in the air, in the sky, you have to have another kind of body that enables you to fly. If you want to live in the ground, then you have to have a body like a rat or a snake that facilitates that. So every living condition has an appropriate form of body. So does the heavenly planet. So when Trishanku was rising in that self-same body, and he was rising higher and higher, and King Vishwamitra Muni, being extremely powerful, was sitting in one place in his ashram and was sending him up by his yogic power. At that time, King Indra happened to look down and say, "What is this? Who is coming here uninvited? Who is this coming without the proper visa?" And then he said, "No," he said, "go back." Just like many times we have illegal aliens, refugees, who come in. And they risk their very lives even. They go illegally from country to country. And then they try to slip in by sea or by some other way. Somehow want to get in, but many times they're caught by the local navies or the coast guards and they send them away. Many times people take great risks like this. One time when I was in Ukraine many years ago, it's almost maybe 10-12 years ago, and there was one Bangladeshi gentleman who had invited me for a program, and not knowing much and thinking he was a good pious man, I went along. I made the mistake of not informing the temple devotees because it happened all of a sudden, and he took me to his apartment, which was in an apartment complex in Kiev, and it was up on the 5th or 6th story or something like that. And as we entered, we saw that there were 50 or 60 people sitting there. So I was very happy that this person has done such nice preaching. He has got 50 to 60 people in Kiev to attend a Bhagavad Gita lecture. So I was very happy. So as I did, I started kirtan and we started little lecture, and then after some time, more than 50% of them got up to go inside to do namaz. Then I understood they were Muslims and it was time to do namaz. But I said, all right, at least whatever, I got a chance to speak about Krishna. And all of a sudden there was huge banging at the door and everybody ran helter-skelter. It was a very small house, just one bedroom, one living room and a kitchen and a toilet and bathroom and small passage. And when this banging started at the door, all these 50-60 people who had squeezed into this house were running here and there, some into the bathrooms and so on. And then the policeman came in when the door was open. And because I was sitting on the Vyasasan, they thought I was the leader of the whole gang. So they came straight for me. Straight away. And fortunately, by Krishna's mercy, I had carried my passport and my visa. That's the first thing they ask for. In places like that, sometimes they put you in jail first and ask questions later. So fortunately, because I had the passport and visa, we showed it. And then they took a long time to study the passport and visa. Finally, my host was desperately trying to make some arrangement with them. Finally, he made some suitable arrangement and sent them away, suitably happy. And then I understood that this Bangladeshi man had a racket of illegal immigrants. And all these 50 or 60, 70 people in that house were all illegal in the country. They had come in the middle of the night, and his business was to send them into Europe. And Kiev for him was a transit point. And after that, naturally, I was not very happy. So he tried to pacify me, make me happy by giving me some dollars. And then he sent me back. So this is the life people lead. They want to go, but every time they are caught by the local police, they're prohibited, they're sent back. Many times people die, they sink, or they're shot dead by the police when they try to escape. This happens even from going from one country to another country on this planet. So what to speak of going from one planet to another planet? How can we expect logically that anyone can just take a spacecraft and just go from one planet to another planet? You cannot just take a motor car and go into another country unless you have the visa. You cannot go from one aeroplane, just travel to another country unless you have permission. If the aircraft does not have permission to fly over that country, immediately the Air Force planes will come and surround, and there will be a big thing. So how can we expect that in other planets we can just simply take a spacecraft and go there? It's not possible. So Indra saw that some illegal immigrant was coming, Trishanku. And Vishwamitra Muni was the agent. And he immediately used his power and sent Trishanku back. So Trishanku began falling down from the sky. Vishwamitra Muni, he was shouting for help. And Vishwamitra Muni said, don't worry. And he sent him back up again. And then Indra saw, what is going on? I sent him down again, he's coming up again. Again he sent him down. Vishwamitra Muni said, oh, he's coming down. Again he sent him up. So he was going up and down. And finally the king begged Vishwamitra Muni, please do something. I am not a rubber ball to be just thrown up and down between two of you. So finally he wanted to create a separate Swargaloka planet for this king. But Indradev pleaded with Vishwamitra Muni and said, please do not do this. because this is against the law of nature. To create another universe is not our business. So please do not do this. So then, somehow or other, Vishwamitra Muni gave Trishanku a place in the middle there. So therefore, today it is said in everyday language in India that if somebody is neither here nor there, if he doesn't take any stand, if he's in between, we say he's like a Trishanku. He doesn't take a stand this way or that way, he is in the middle. So in this way we see that going from one planet to another planet is not a question of physical transportation. The method is given here. You have to leave your body first. You have to die on the earth planet. After having accumulated sufficient pious activities, when you leave your body, then the soul will take birth on that planet. And then we will be born as a resident of the moon planet or sun planet or whatever planet that we want to go to. That is the process. Yanti deva vrata devan pitrin yanti pitra vrata bhutani yanti bhutejya yanti madhyachinopimam. This is Krishna's formula in the Bhagavad Gita. And the same principle applies also for going to Krishna's planets, the Vaikuntha world. We cannot simply go by spacecraft. The residents of the higher planets can travel, they can commute very easily. They come and go by the mystic pathways, by the Milky Way. And they can come and go easily without problems. Because of their extraordinary pious activity, because they are residents of the higher planets, they move in a very subtle fashion. But we residents of the earth planet, we are very gross. So our transportation is gross, so we think of transportation also in a gross way. So when we think of going from one planet to another planet, immediately we think of a rocket or a spaceship. It is so gross. But the residents of the higher planets don't think like that. It is said that when Shukadeva Goswami arrived at the place where Parikshit Maharaj had come to spend the last 7 days of his life, then the news spread like wildfire all over the universe. And people came not only from the earth planet, from the different continents and the islands, but the great sages and rishis came even from the higher planets. How did they manage to come so fast? They didn't have any problem of wait list and reservations. They just came straight through the mystic pathways. They travel easily. There is a certain path that the mystics can take. And they come in through that path. It's a very short path for them because they travel through other dimensions. Whereas the gross humans on earth, they try to travel only through the gross pathways, which takes very long and impossible. Prabhupada in one place, he says also that, by the way, the calculations of the modern scientists, if you want to go to the nearest planet, you would have to travel for such a long time in your mechanical spacecraft. But by the mystic pathways, it's easy so quickly. In the Srimad Bhagavatam also we read how the great rishis used to appear in the courts of the kings. They came from Maharloka, Janaloka. For example, the nine Yogendras, one fine day, all of a sudden they appeared in the court of King Nimi. They came from the higher planets, just entered there. And after they had finished their work, they went back to those planets. So, to be advanced means to be subtle. Now, we are trying to do things in the gross way, but it is not possible. The subtle process is described here. Also in the Srimad Bhagavatam, in the portion that has been discussed these days in the class, we hear about the four Kumaras being empowered to travel anywhere and everywhere within and beyond the universe. And how do they do that? Because of their austerities, because of their mind being controlled, their mind being absorbed in something beyond matter. So therefore they got that potency by which they could move at will, freely. throughout the universe and even beyond the universe. So this is something that our scientists and the people of this world should also read and try to understand. We'll read this one last chapter. Yet, Bhagavad Gita does not advise us to go to any of the planets in this material world. Because even if we go to Brahmaloka, the highest planet, through some sort of mechanical contrivance, by maybe traveling for 40,000 years, and who would live for that long? We will still find the material inconveniences of birth, death, disease and old age. But one who wants to approach the supreme planet Krishna Loka or any of the other planets within the spiritual sky will not meet with these material inconveniences. Amongst all of the planets in the spiritual sky, there is one supreme planet called Goloka Vrindavan, which is the original planet in the abode of the original personality of Godhead Shri Krishna. All of this information is given in the Bhagavad Gita, and we are given through its instruction, information on how to leave the material world and begin a truly blissful life in the spiritual sky. Unquote. So having described in the previous paragraph how one can do interplanetary travel within this universe, Prabhupada gives us sound advice after that, that better not bother with it. No need to try. You try to go straight to the spiritual world. It is much better to go there. And if you try by some mechanical means to travel, how can you go for 40,000 years? Who would live for that long anyway? So better to aspire for being transferred to the spiritual planet. The different Vishnu forms of the Lord, they all have the planets, and because Krishna is the original Vishnu, he has the special planet, the original spiritual planet Goloka Vrindavan, from which all other Vaikuntha planets emanate. Just as from Krishna come all the other Vishnu forms, similarly, just as Krishna is Swayam Bhagavan, Goloka Vrindavan is Swayam Dham. It is the abode of Swayam Bhagavan. All the Vaikuntha Lokas are abodes of Bhagavan, but Goloka Vrindavan is the abode of Swayam Bhagavan, of the original personality of Godhead, Swayam Dham. And Prabhupada advises us that we should use the instructions of the Bhagavad Gita to transfer ourselves from this material world, which is full of misery, to the spiritual world to begin a truly blissful life in the spiritual sky. So how many of us want to be there in that truly blissful life in the spiritual sky? So we are all headed there. Sooner or later, we are all going to reach. It's a matter of time, if we only stick on in the process and not deviate from here. So that is our destination. That is where we are meant to go. And Krishna Balaram Mandir here is the embassy of that Goloka Vrindavan. So here we are all waiting for our visas to come. It takes a little time, but it's being processed. So if we just stay long enough in the process, then eventually our visa is assured. And it's a one-time residency visa, permanent residency citizenship visa. You can go, you don't have to come back. Krishna has promised that. Yad gatva na nivartante tad dhama paramam mama. That is the goal of our life. Thank you very much. We'll stop here. Are there any questions or comments? Yes.
Conscious.
The question is, if everything is personal in the spiritual world, then why is the Brahma Jyoti called impersonal Brahman? Good question. Who would like to answer? Yes. The Brahma Jyoti is the effulgence of the Lord. It only has light but doesn't have form, and therefore it is not personal. Is it conscious? It is conscious but not personal. Okay, anything else? Yes.
It's like the sun and the sunshine.
Okay, just like the sun has a sun god who is personal, but the sunshine is not personal, although it's a part of the sun. All right, any other explanation? The consciousness, or rather the Brahma Jyoti, is Krishna's consciousness. It's not separate. Just as a sunlight is a sun's light, the light of the sun, it doesn't exist separate from the sun. So the Brahma Jyoti is the consciousness of Krishna. Just as a soul has its consciousness that spreads throughout the body, so also the Brahma Jyoti is the consciousness of Krishna that spreads out all through the spiritual and material creations. All right. Anything else? Yes, Mata.
Doesn't mean that everything conscious should have form. Formless means it has form, but it is zero form.
So Mataji is saying that consciousness doesn't necessarily mean always form. Okay, anything else? Yes.
Our philosophy is a personal philosophy which gives its service. And anyone who is there in Brahma Jyoti is in dormant state.
Yes, our philosophy is personal. It deals with service. And in the Brahma Jyoti, we are in the dormant state. Actually, all of the answers are correct in different angles. It is right. But this is the most important word we were looking for, service. The constitutional position of the jiva, the dharma, we have seen, is what? Service. Service is done by a conscious living entity. It is done to another conscious living entity or to something else. In the Brahma Jyoti, there is consciousness, but the entire feature of life, of the living entity, or even of Krishna, or even the living entity, is not manifest. The entire feature is Sat-Chit Ananda. But we have seen earlier that in the Brahma Jyoti, there is only realization of the Sat feature, consciousness feature. The Chit and Ananda features are not prominently present there. Therefore, there is no spirit of service. Therefore, the devotees do not like it. They consider the Brahma Jyoti Kaivalya Narakayate to be like hell, because there is no opportunity to serve. The serving mood cannot be brought out in that Brahma Jyoti. So it is conscious. But at the same time, because of lack of form, because of the lack of realization of Chit and Ananda, it is not possible to serve. It is not developed to the extent of developing our serving potential. So So therefore it is called impersonal, because the possibility to serve is not there. Any other point? Yes. Yes. Thank you very much. Some very nice comments made by Mataji. She said actually Vishwamitra Muni created this planet, but he could not maintain it. He created specially for Trishanku. And then the Lord had to be petitioned by him to maintain, and he said, yes, I will do it, but on the condition that you don't do these things again. And therefore Trishanku is still there with his head downwards and his feet up, hanging there in the middle. Hare Krishna. Any other questions or comments? Yes. The question is that in the higher planets, do we have all the four, birth, death, old age and disease? Right? That's the question. Who will answer? Yes. Elements. Okay, first we'll deal with the answer to that question. Yes, Mataji has given the right answer, that in the heavenly planets, in the higher planets actually, there is death, there is birth, but there is no old age and there is no disease. And even the birth and death is not as gross as it is here. An interesting fact is that not only are they born, not only do they die fresh, in the fresh youthful form, but they're also born like that. The Mahabharata describes that They just appear on a bed of rose petals. One fine day just appear. Beautiful, young, fresh body. Youthful body. Remains like that for the whole lifetime. And having been born in that way, they're not dependent on the usual procedures, but they appear. And then they live their life, and when the time comes for them, when their punya has been exhausted, kshine punya marti lokam vishanti, then they start feeling very depressed. That's what the Mahabharata says. Oh, I have to go down, I have to go down, I've enjoyed so many years, now I have to go. Just like a person on a vacation is thinking, oh, now I have to go back and start my business again. So they get very depressed, but still they remain in their youthful, beautiful form. And then they fall down, and there's an elaborate description of what happens when they fall down. Of course, that's another whole topic, it's a pastime in itself from Mahabharata. How they fall down, what encounter, what adventures they experience. And then eventually they enter into rainwater. The rainwater comes into the soil, and then it goes into the seeds. And the seeds then come into our food. And then some father eats it. Some father. And then that jiva is then transmitted in the womb of some mother. And then he's born. That is how the whole thing takes place. So there is no disease. There is no old age. But there is death and birth, but in a subtle way. In the sense that there is anxiety everywhere. And there are some cases of disease coming, like Indra had some things when he is cursed. So these things are there. But in general we see it's not like our kind of disease, that we have to keep visiting the doctor. Not like that. And as far as Mataji's question, what was that about the lower planets? That they also enjoy so much. And yeah, so in the Bhagavatam it is described that there are three kinds of Swargalokas. Does anybody know? What are the three kinds of Swargalokas in the creation? Yes. The highest Swarga Loka, the real Swarga Loka, is called Divya Swarga. That is where Indra and his associates reside. Then you have the Swarga on earth, which is called Bhauma Swarga. You may have Hawaii, or you may have whatever. Planets that are, cities and places that have just so much of natural beauty, and everything is, climate is just right. Neither cold nor hot, so much sense gratification available. Like heavenly places on earth. Yes, Bhauma Swarga. There also there is enjoyment. And then there is Bilva Swarga. Bila Swarga, not Bilva, Bila. Bila Swarga. That is that heavenly planet, or the heavenly planets that are in the lower planetary systems. So the Nagas and so on, they live there, and they experience pleasures that even the human beings cannot, and they even have powers that the human beings do not have. So these living beings are living there in these lower planets, but they are also kind of heavenly planets. Bali Maharaj is residing in which planet? Sutala Loka. It's a lower planet, and unbelievable opulences and facilities over there. And of course, the Supreme Lord is standing there as a doorkeeper, guarding Bali Maharaj's house. So the material universe is astounding. And we will never be able to understand even this universe, material universe. So what to speak of other things? So better to just chant Hare Krishna and go back to the spiritual world and enjoy eternal blissful life over there. So we'll stop here. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
happens for a day, where testing for the machine learning, capturing the data, for example, first.